Just as we begin, I thought what I wanted to do was to encourage you just to take a few moments and to see if you can think of a place or a space where you feel totally safe, totally secure. Might be a physical place, might be hanging out with a certain group of people. It might be a space where you can just pause in your day and feel connected. But most important with this space or this place is that it's somewhere where you know that you're okay, whatever that means. Where no matter what is happening in your life, you feel secure, you feel grounded and able to cope. Hopefully there will be a place like that for each one of us, but just see if you can take your mind to such a place and just reflect for a moment on how it feels for you when you think about that or you find yourself there. So having encouraged you to think about that, what I'd like you to do is just to hold that for now and just bring it back and reflect on it a little bit later as we explore a little bit about Holy Week, Jesus' last week. And as Helen's been alluding to, we're sort of in Bethany, and if we've been reading our Bibles faithfully over the years, as many of us have been, or even in more recent years, probably for most of us, we're familiar with the name of Bethany. It's the place that we associate primarily with two women, Mary and Martha, who were very close friends of Jesus. There's another place called Bethany elsewhere in the Gospels called Bethany beyond the Jordan, but that's a long way further east. Bethany that we're thinking about, our Bethany, is the place where Jesus raised Lazarus to life, as we explored last week. It's a village just very close in to the edge of Jerusalem, about 2 or 3 kilometers just to the east of the Temple Mount. So very, very close, just beyond the city boundaries. And we don't know much about the origins of Bethany. We don't know much about its name, why it was called that. But probably the most commonly accepted understanding is that the name Bethany means house of affliction or poor house, something like that. So scholars have concluded over the years that ancient Bethany was the site of an almshouse for the poor and a place of caring for the sick. According to some very ancient Hebrew texts, there were 3 places for the care of the sick, including 1 for lepers, located just to the east of Jerusalem. And so given Bethany's location, it's very possible that this was one of those historic places where the sick were cared for, especially lepers. Mark and Matthew both refer to an incident that took place for Jesus in the house of Simon the leper at Bethany. So it's not unlikely that in Jesus' time, the village was still a place where those who were sick and outcast from society found care and relief and compassion. And you'd probably have to be a fairly caring and compassionate person to live there, because you'd be used to sick and ill people and outcasts and people on the margins being there amongst you. So let's hold that thought for a moment as well. Our location is Bethany. Our context is safe places. We're at the start of Holy Week, as we've been reminded this week. And I kind of hope that as church, we're going to be journeying through the gospel narratives this week, just day by day, reading through Mark or Matthew or Luke or John or all 4 of them maybe, just reliving the moments leading up to Jesus's arrest and death as we approach Good Friday. Of course, this is Palm Sunday, and we could have had the palm branches and done the big triumphal procession stuff again today. But what I wanted us to do was to focus on some of the events of Easter week. And I suppose the question I have in my mind as we approach Easter week this year is, I wonder how Jesus was feeling as he reached this last week of his life. Thinking of him here as a man, Jesus the man, of Jesus of Nazareth, leaving aside for the moment that Jesus was also divine, that he was and is God, we mustn't forget that Jesus was also human. He lived his humanity. He was born as a son to Mary. And just like us, as a human, he had feelings. He had thoughts. He had fears. He felt the pressures. We see that, I think, in the gospel accounts coming through the week ahead. But as Jesus approached this week, he had an inkling of what was to come. Maybe he didn't know all the precise details, but he knew the gist of what was going to happen. I wonder if Jesus had had an appointments calendar for the week ahead, if it might have looked a little bit like this. Sorry, that was a picture of a safe place. I meant to show that in case you needed a reminder of a safe place. And I thought, you know, looking at all the events in the Gospels, we could probably put together a little calendar showing everything that Jesus knew he needed to do day by day. On Sunday, he'd got to plan a big parade, he'd got to ride into Jerusalem, he'd got to look at the temple, then he was going to head home to Bethany. He'd got to go on Monday into Jerusalem, he was going to create a ruckus in the temple, he was going to look for opportunities for teaching and miracles. He was going to be ready for challenges from the religious leaders, then he was going to walk back to Bethany. On Tuesday, he was going to walk back to Jerusalem. He was going to be ready for more debates with the religious leaders, do some teaching in the temple, be ready for some tough eschatological questions from the 12, and then dinner at Simon the leper's place. Wednesday, well, maybe he put a cross through that day to keep it clear of appointments, maybe a quiet day in Bethany. But then Thursday, the walk back to Jerusalem, the preparations for the Passover meal, the Last Supper, and then who knows what was to come. It was out of his hands at that stage. But I wonder if Jesus, looking at his week ahead, knowing that all these things were going to come up, all these things needed to happen, I wonder how he was feeling. A little bit like Fiona talking about setting off on Tuesday with this massive schedule of things she's got over the coming weeks. Here's Jesus, and he's got all of this compressed into a week. And of course, along the way, as he was thinking about this, as he was preparing himself mentally for it, Jesus needed to make an impact. His entry to Jerusalem needed to be a statement of his brand of messiahship. He needed to make some sort of statement in the temple to try and demonstrate that what wasn't going on there was worship. He needed to focus on his disciples. He'd got a lot to teach them, the last things they needed to know and understand before his inevitable death. So he had to mastermind all of this stuff as much as he could ahead of time. Do we have a pause? The bread's ready. A bit like going around an open home, isn't it? Having the bread baking in the background. So Jesus has got all of these pressures, all of these things he knows that are coming up, all of these things he needs to do. But he also probably has got an inkling that he's going to be dealing with fickle crowds. He's going to be dealing with uncomprehending disciples. And he's going to be dealing with incredibly hostile religious leaders looking for any opportunity to arrest him. But we see too, as we read through these accounts of what happened, that for Jesus, he was determined. He had anger. He was sad. He was forceful. He was compassionate. And he was caring. Through all of this, maybe too, Jesus needed some personal space to prepare himself mentally for what was to come. He had a busy and a pressured schedule. I don't know if you noticed it, there is something that I wove through there that is there in the gospel accounts, and I wonder if it's something we don't often notice or think about as we read about what happened day by day for Jesus. I think we get very focused through Easter week on the drama, the tension, the arguments, the teaching, the conversations, the confrontation, all of the stuff that's happening up front. Of course, they're at the core of the story of Easter week. They're at the core of everything that Easter is about. But do we stop and focus on Jesus the man rather than Jesus the Superman, the divine Superman in all of this? What about Jesus in his humanity? How was he feeling, facing this week and living this week? What I thought we'd do is look at some passages from Matthew, Mark, and John and notice a pattern of what we might otherwise easily miss. I was hoping, expecting to have my row of volunteer youth group here this morning, but they've gone, they've deserted me. So Helen, could you find some people to read those? Island people are amazingly generous volunteers when need be. So whoever has John chapter 12, verses 1 to 2a, would they like to read it?
Yep. 6 days before the Passover celebrations began, Jesus arrived in Bethany, the home of Lazarus, the man he had raised from the dead. A dinner was prepared in Jesus' honour.
Okay, so number one, Matthew 21. Who's got Matthew 21? Looks like it's down to the back to Mike.
The blind and the lame came to him in the temple, and he healed them. The leading priests and the teachers of religious law saw these wonderful miracles and heard even the children in the temple shouting, "Praise God for the Son of David." But the leaders were indignant. They asked Jesus, "Do you hear what these children are saying?" "Yes," Jesus replied. "Haven't you ever read the scriptures? For they say, 'You have taught children and infants to give you praise.'" Then he returned to Bethany, where he stayed overnight.
Probably beginning to get the picture here. Mark chapter 11, 11 verse 12.
So Jesus came to Jerusalem and went into the temple. After looking around carefully at everything, he left because it was late in the afternoon. Then he returned to Bethany with the 12 disciples. The next morning, as they were leaving Bethany, Jesus was hungry.
You notice the word Bethany keeps cropping up, doesn't it, in these accounts of Easter week. Matthew 26. Thanks, Karen.
When Jesus had finished saying all these things, he said to his disciples, "As you know, Passover is beginning in 2 days, and the Son of Man will be handed over to be crucified." At that same time, the leading priests and elders were meeting at the residence of Caiaphas, the high priest, plotting how to capture Jesus secretly and kill him. "But not during this Passover celebration," they agreed, "or the people may riot." Meanwhile, Jesus was in Bethany at the home of Simon, a man who had previously had leprosy.
Thanks. And then Matthew 26, 17 to 18. Thanks, Richard.
On the first day of the festival of unleavened bread, the disciples came to Jesus and asked, "Where do you want us to prepare the Passover meal for you?" "As you go into the city," he told them, "you will see a certain man. Tell him, 'The teacher says, my time has come, and I will eat the Passover meal with my disciples at your house.'"
Great. Then we'll have a slight pause before we have the next one. But do you get the pattern here? There's this sense, here is Jesus engaging in all of these things in Jerusalem. Massive confrontation, a lot of demonstration of who he is and what he's here to do. But each evening he retires to Bethany. And back in the morning again, he's back into the city. So where did Jesus spend his nights? Yes, of course, very practically, he needed to stay somewhere. And it's very clear that he left the city at nightfall every night and then back to Jerusalem each morning. And against the backdrop of the awfulness of the events of Easter week, we see that Jesus had a place of retreat, a place he could go back to each night, a place where he could feel safe and secure, a place away from the hostile crowds and the religious leaders, a place where he had friends who cared for him, who looked after him, and who gave him rest, a place to rest, and they fed him. Of course, we know about Mary and Martha and Lazarus. Maybe he stayed at their home. It's easy to imagine that that was the case, isn't it? And we read, too, of a meal one night at someone else's home, the home of Simon, a man known as the leper. So probably somebody who had previously had leprosy. Maybe it was somebody that Jesus healed. We don't know. Maybe we don't need to know that. But as someone who had received healing from leprosy, Simon would have had a sense of great affinity with Jesus, the healer, the one who had compassion on those who were on the margins. So this meal is right at the heart of this last week. In terms of Jesus' public-facing ministry, we have a lot of information. We see little glimpses of Bethany, but we have this meal is at the heart of Jesus' personal private life for that week. So what I wanted to do was just focus this in on there, and I'm going to focus this in through Matthew's account, and it's very slightly different from John's account. as Helen showed us. The slightly different part of the anatomy gets anointed in Matthew and Mark's Gospels. Can anyone tell me without a sneak preview? In John's Gospel, Mary, we are told, anoints Jesus' feet. In Matthew and Mark, we don't have a name, and something different happens. His head gets anointed. Slightly different feeling, isn't it, to having your feet anointed, but he got a whole mass of perfume poured over his head. So we'll have a look at, Cam, you're going to read this, are you? Matthew's Gospel, thanks.
Meanwhile, Jesus was in Bethany at the home of Simon, a man who had previously had leprosy. While he was eating, a woman came in with a beautiful alabaster jar of expensive perfume and poured it over his head. The disciples were indignant when they saw this. "What a waste," they said. "It could have been sold for a high price and the money given to the poor." But Jesus, aware of this, replied, "Why criticize this woman for doing such a good thing to me? You will always have the poor among you, but you will not always have me. She has poured this perfume on me to prepare my body for burial. I tell you the truth, wherever the good news is preached throughout the world, this woman's deed will be remembered and discussed."
Thanks. Do you just want to hold on to it? Because I'm going to ask you to read it again in a moment, if that's okay. But interestingly, John, Matthew, and Mark give us an account of this event. It changes very subtly between the different gospel writers. But here at the heart of Easter week, it is this amazing meal and this amazingly beautiful act of love that is done to Jesus by a woman whose name we maybe associate with Mary, Mary of Bethany, but maybe she's an unknown woman. It doesn't matter. It's this wonderful act of love that is done to Jesus. And I guess what I wanted us to focus on this week was this sense of in the midst of Holy Week, there is still a thread of something lovely going on underneath it. The invitation this year is, as you read through the gospel accounts, to notice that is there. So I want us to just spend a little bit of time reflecting on this passage, and I thought I'd ask Cam to read it again, and then I just want to explore this passage through the lens of the different people involved.
Meanwhile, Jesus was in Bethany at the home of Simon, a man who had previously had leprosy. While he was eating, a woman came in with a beautiful alabaster jar of expensive perfume and poured it over his head. The disciples were indignant when they saw this. "What a waste," they said. "It could have been sold for a high price and the money given to the poor." But Jesus, aware of this, replied, "Why criticize this woman for doing such a good thing to me? You will always have the poor among you, but you will not always have me. She has poured this perfume on me to prepare my body for burial. I tell you the truth, wherever the good news is preached throughout the world, this woman's deed will be remembered and discussed."
Thanks, Cam. So, here's a picture of this event happening, and there's four characters there. So I think let's look at this through the lens of four characters from that scene. Firstly, I guess the one standing at the back on the left, who I'm going to say is Simon the leper. He was the host. He was the one who had organized the evening. He was the one who'd set it up. It was his home where it all happened. And I guess as I think about Simon, I want to say to him, I wonder, Simon, if you were excited to have Jesus in your house. You no longer had the stigma of leprosy. I wonder if maybe Jesus was the one who healed you. Now you're an accepted member of society. You're no longer pushed beyond the margins. What a delight it must have been for you to have Jesus to come to your house and eat a meal with you. You've noticed Jesus this week. He's been busy backwards and forwards to Jerusalem. But he seems keen to hang out each night at Bethany with his friends. And you were keen to have him in your home. You wanted to honor him as well. And Simon, Jesus has honored you with his presence. I wonder how you felt about the woman and the perfume, Simon. I wonder if you were pleased to see Jesus being the center of attention and to be honored in this way, in your house, to see Jesus safe and secure and loved. The figure on the bottom left, I think, represents a skeptical, slightly grumpy disciple. So let's think about the disciples, a different approach. What can we say about you guys? Maybe you were just tired and grumpy this night. After all, you'd had a pretty full-on week. You'd been backwards and forwards to the city with Jesus. And Jesus seemed to be in endless, endless confrontation. And in between all of that, he kept on teaching you, teaching you, teaching you. There seemed to be so much new stuff he wanted to tell you about. There was just so much to take in. So maybe you're just tired and grumpy at the end of the day. But guys, how many times has Jesus told you that he's going to die? He's even told you how he's going to die. And right before this dinner date, he told you again, and he told you again it was only going to be 2 days before it all happened. How come you're so upset at this woman? Is it just that he has so dinned into you the importance of looking after the poor that you just can't see beyond it? Or maybe you were jealous that you, the closest ones to Jesus, hadn't thought of doing something public and beautiful for him. Yet you grumped your way through the evening, not appreciating the beauty of what this woman did. And I wonder, as you looked back on this evening, in the years to come, did you regret your grumpiness at what the woman did? The woman, of course, is quite clear. So let's think about her, what was going on in her mind. I wonder what she was thinking. I wonder what you were thinking, Mary or whatever your name was. Something must have triggered the desire in you to do something so beautiful. Were you someone who had been forgiven much? Or had you been sitting at Jesus' feet and listening to what he was saying? Had you been really listening? And realizing that something momentous was about to happen. Something within you then responded with this simple but most extravagant act of love. We don't know what was in your mind, but clearly you loved much. You poured out your affection and your honor on Jesus. Jesus rebuked his disciples for criticizing you for doing this. In Mark's account, we read that Jesus referred to what you did as a beautiful thing. It was lovely, it was good, but in Jesus' mind, it was beautiful. To us, it seems like an act of extreme extravagance, reckless extravagance, really messy extravagance too. But Jesus sees this as a beautiful gesture, a symbolic act, anointing him in an extravagant way, as symbolic of what he was about to endure. Your reckless extravagance stands in such sharp contrast to everything else that was going on that week. How Jesus must have appreciated it. And so Jesus, I wonder how you felt about all this. You must have felt so tired that week. You'd been on the road for many, many, many months, always moving on. These last few days you've been located in Bethany, but you've been backwards and forwards into the city. Everywhere you go now, the atmosphere is tense. You've got lots of teaching time with the disciples and with the crowds, but you have much confrontation and much hatred to endure as well. Bethany must have been a real haven for you each night, among your friends, time to relax, time to rest. Must have felt so good this evening to be at Simon's house, amongst a wider circle of people who loved you and cared for you. You've poured everything into your disciples, haven't you? But they still don't seem to get it. Still, you've done just about all that you can do to prepare them for what is to come. And you've got to just trust that they will get it, and they will carry on the work that you've equipped them for. So tonight is a night to relax, a lovely chance to enjoy a meal, just tomorrow to get through, and then the day after is the Passover, when the end is to begin. How beautiful it must have felt to have so much expensive perfume poured over you. I wonder what it was really like to feel that perfume running down your face, your beard, your neck. Maybe it felt messy. But for you, anointing with oil was perhaps more familiar. The perfume, though, must have been so amazing, something so sensuous, something so expensive, something so extravagant, an act of love like no other. Something exquisitely beautiful done for you who have done so many beautiful things for so many people. I wonder how often, Jesus, you received beautiful gifts. You were so used to demanding people, contrary people, theologically challenged people, and belligerent people. How often did you receive acts of love and beauty? And here, just 2 days before your arrest, is an amazing act of beauty, an expression of love and honor like no other. Of course, there's one other person in this story. That's me. That's you. Where do we fit? Where do I fit? I guess as I imagine the scene, maybe there is an invitation to sit there right alongside Jesus, right there enjoying every moment of what unfolds. The perfume seems such an extravagant act, but it's so beautiful. The smell, the aroma is just so amazing. This woman clearly has a spontaneous but a very effusive heart. That's challenging for me. How spontaneous am I in showing my love to you, Jesus? What do I do for you that is a thing of beauty? Who can I be for you, Jesus, as an offering of beauty? How would it be if I were to hear you say of me, "You've done a beautiful thing for me"? I feel I ask a lot of you, Jesus. Yet you consistently show me acceptance, forgiveness, and love. What can I offer you today, now, in terms of my heart, my life, as an offering of love, as an offering even of beauty? I feel challenged, Jesus, with this week ahead, as I think about my own busyness, all the things that are sitting in my calendar for this week. It's going to be a frenetic week. There's a lot to squeeze in. It's a short working week as well. And I know there's people have got kids to get organized for Easter camp. Stuff has got to get sorted for going away over Easter. And there's probably lots and lots of stuff going on in all of our lives. But I feel challenged, Jesus. How can I show my love to you in some way this week? How can I, in some way, provide Bethany space for you? and space maybe for others, the people around who cross my path and who have needs that I need to attend to.